My mom used to say that in the United States of Asgard, you can feel the moments when the threads of destiny knot together to push you or pull you or crush you, but only if you're paying attention. It was a game we played during long afternoons in the van, distracting ourselves from Dad's empty seat. Mom would point out a sign as we drove past. Welcome to Colorado, the Centennial King State. Bright green against a gray backdrop of mountains. And she'd ask, "Here, Soren, do you feel the threads tightening around you?" I would put my fingers to my chest where Dad used to say the berserking fever stirred. "No," I'd say, "nothing yet." And Mom always replied, "Good." We both dreaded the day Dad's curse would flicker to life in me. Leaving Westport City, "Come again. I hope it wasn't back there, my little man." "No, Mom, I doubt it." Kentucky, home of bluegrass. "Soren, do you hear the clacking loom of fate?" I couldn't hear anything over the banjos. But I have felt it. 4 times now. When I was 8 years old, standing in a neon-lit shopping mall, and my ears began to ring. My breath thinned out, and I ran. Again 5 years later, when Mom stopped the van for gas, and we happened to be across the road from a militia station. The sun was just barely too bright, cutting across my cheek. I knew what I was supposed to do. 6 months ago, I was in the dining hall about to take a long drink of honey soda when the air around me turned cold. I had time to get to my bedroom before this jagged hot fever began to burn. And today, it's Tuesday afternoon. And so I'm in the library reading the thickest section of The Lays of Thomas Jefferson for my poetry and legends class, trying to ignore my excited classmates as they whisper back and forth about the famous new student arriving any moment now at Sancta Sigurd's. Perry Swanson and her roommate huddle over a copy of the winter issue of Teen Seer, which isn't the sort of magazine I normally pay attention to. The headlines tend toward fashion and boy hunting. Top 10 ways to make runes sexy, and dating and prophecy, things he doesn't want to hear. I definitely don't want to hear. But the cover features a girl my age against a shocking orange background, her eyes sad, curls like licorice twists around her face, and there's a necklace of large black pearls at her throat. Her hands are up, gripping ropes, as if she's been caught on a swing. The headline reads, "Astrid Glynn, 17 and ready to change your world." I stare back at her, as if she can see out from the glossy cover. I hear my mom's voice echoing against the metal roof of that old V-dub. "Is this the sound a knot in fate makes, little man?" A commotion at the library window has Perry on her feet, and she races over with her roommate stepping at her heels. I slowly stand, waiting until I'll be the last to arrive. Over the bobbing heads, I look through the panes of glass toward the front gate of the school as a silver town car pulls through, its windows tinted so dark the sunlight vanishes against them. The girl in front of me holds up her cell phone to take a picture, and on the ground outside, students pause on their way between classes to stare. It isn't that Astrid has done anything remarkable on her own, but we all know of her mother. Astrid grew up traveling the country like me, but she wasn't living in trailers in the backs of old vans. Astrid is the daughter of the most famous Seathkona in a generation, a prophetess who read the fate of the president himself and had private rooms in the Whitehall in Philadelphia. But Jenna Glynn vanished one night about 5 years ago from the South Lakota Plains, setting off a days-long search that eventually recovered her body. Astrid was on TV at the time, small and sunken and alone, and I'd wanted to send her a letter because I knew what it felt like when your parent died in front of the world. I turn away from the library window and go back to the Lays. It will not be me who makes her feel like a specimen on her first day at a new school, no matter how my blood is rushing in my ears. But the next afternoon, she walks into our history classroom and stops beside me. She looks less glossy in real life, with messier hair, but the black pearls are the same. I stop breathing as her eyes level on the spear tattoo cutting down my left cheek. She might stare forever, and I might let her. If not for her roommate, Taffy, who tugs Astrid into a desk. All through Mr. Heaney's lecture, I feel her watching me. Feel the fever churning in my chest. It's good I've done my own reading on the Montreal Troll Wars, so I don't have to worry about missing anything vital for the test. When class ends, I wait, as I usually do, for all the other students to file out, so I can slip through the narrow aisle by myself. But Astrid remains, pushing Taffy on with a silent wave. Even Mr. Heaney leaves us alone. He pulls a black cigarette from his pocket and marches outside to indulge in that particularly Freyan habit. I slowly stand. Astrid's eyes are washed brown, the color of very old paper. She reaches toward me, her finger aiming for my tattoo. I don't move. If she touches me, I'll let her. I even want her to. A thought that makes me hot all over. And tell myself it's only the berserking fever, not hormones or wanting. But she doesn't. Astrid only holds her arm out and turns her eyes to mine. I dreamed of you, she says, in a voice as distant as clouds. Then she spins and is gone from the classroom. The words sink down through my skin and embed themselves in my bones.